Okay, so hey everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Faux Global. This is where we connect with global first entrepreneurs and remote work experts from all around the world. Our guest today is Albert Owusu Asare, co-founder and CEO at Cadena. Albert, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Ben. It's a pleasure and I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I mean it's great to have you with us at the Faux Global today, and maybe let's start with some brief background. Could you start by sharing your journey that led you to your current role as a co-founder and CEO at Cadena?
Yeah, I'll do that very quickly. So my journey begins as a 17-year-old boy from Ghana, West Africa. First time on a plane, first time getting out of my country. I come to the US for school. I go to a small school in Iowa, of all places. And so I do school there. And that's actually where I met my co-founder. But after school, I went over to New York to work for Goldman Sachs. And I did that for about 4 to 5 years. And then we started a business before Cadena. That business went on to be very successful, where I was the CTO of that business. And then, you know, fast forward, really, Cadena is just born from a desire to do something a little bit global. I saw the opportunities that I had by coming to America, living my American dream. And so the idea was, how can we make it so that millions of people around the world, right, can also live their version of the American dream? So we started the business 3 years ago, and the rest is history.
And that's awesome. But let's go a bit deeper to that. So your transition from coding at Goldman Sachs to becoming CTO at Isuzu, right? Isuzu. And now CEO at Cadena is quite remarkable, in fact, right? So how did your previous roles prepare you for founding Cadena?
That's a great question. So those three hopes are actually intertwined. You know, I got the privilege of working at Goldman on the card project. So if you're not iPhone user, you have the Apple card. So I got a little bit of experience there. And then at Isuzu, really as the first engineer and CTO, I built most of the infrastructure that still runs today. It's very different going from an individual contributor at a company to like an executive hire and then eventually to be a CEO. I feel like I got different experiences in each hop, right? As an individual contributor, you're always thinking about how can you make the best impact on your team. I feel like that experience really has now allowed me to know how to nurture other individual contributors on my team, right? Or what did I not like, right? What did I like? And so that was very unique. And then as a CTO, one of the biggest things you learn just when you're an executive is you have to think beyond your domain, right? You come into the role and you think your role is just to build code and software and let it run. And you're like, well, we have to sell the software. Someone has to like it. You have to work with marketing. So it was very unique because for the first time, right, I started zooming out a little bit and seeing how my role intersects with other leaders in the organization. And that was a great learning. Fast forward to being a CEO, it's very different, right? Like I haven't written a line of code in 2 years or 3 years. I'm doing marketing, finance, investor relations. Those are all very different skills. But I'll say that the underlying thread is just that ability to just throw yourself into big unknowns and just like optimizing for growth. So those are just sort of the way that they relate. But I feel like my software engineering role as an individual contributor, the CTO, has definitely prepared me right for where I am today.
Yeah, and that's really awesome. But what maybe experiences shaped your vision for transforming global hiring and payroll? What sparked this change? Why did you decide to launch Cadena?
Yeah, so look, you know, when you work at a place like Goldman Sachs, you get to interact with different people around the world. And then fast forward, when we started building Isuzu, we actually built it remote. This was before COVID, when it was very attractive now for remote companies. But we decided to build the company remotely. What that meant was we had to hire, right, as a CTO, I had to hire engineers from, you know, India, Brazil, all these places. And the shocking thing was these were really smart people. The attitude was just really good too. They were eager to work. They were just exciting to work with. So I was just like, this is interesting, right? How can we make it so that we can have more of these people, right, experience life from where they are? And then obviously being from Ghana, I do miss my country, right? I miss being home. I miss the food. And so the thought was, well, in the future, can you create a world where people don't have to leave, right, their countries? And those things came together beautifully. And I said, let me just throw myself in the next 20, 30 years on this problem and make a huge impact.
And probably my favorite question that I really like to ask entrepreneurs, how did you secure your first client?
Great question. Look, like sales is not, you know, a skill that I thought I had or something that I'll ever do, right? My job was just code. I can debate about different design patterns, architecture all day. But all of a sudden, when you're a CEO, now you're selling. And the way we did this is just really, we reached out to LinkedIn. We had built a community of just talking, right, about these things we're passionate about. And so eventually people understood what we're trying to do. But I just really reached out to some executives at some of the companies we're trying to secure. I told them, look, like, this is what we're doing. This is how I can show value. You always emphasize on the value, right? People just don't buy things because they like you. We're able to demonstrate that. And it took some iterations. Obviously, some people said, no, don't message me ever again. Some people said, I don't need this. But over time, someone eventually picks up the phone, get on the call, and then, you know, you're able to close that sale. So that's how it happened.
Okay. So you cannot share any specific details about your first client.
I mean we had different, you know, when we started out, we also had some friends that were just kind enough to try us out, right? Just like, talk to your network. And
You're talking.
They don't pay you, right? What they do, yeah, is they test things out, they show you where the bugs are. But for our first paying client, we had to kind of reach out and ask them to join.
So it was kind of cold calling, yeah?
LinkedIn.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so with Scadena, companies can hire worldwide without the hassle of setting up like a local entities, all those countries that you cover, basically. So for those guys at the top, like especially maybe tech founders, how does this approach help in making things like a smoother, like a keeping things legal and saving some money?
Yeah, I think that the nice thing about where we are today is I think that the genie is out of the bottle. People kind of intuitively understand that there's brilliant people around the world. Like it hasn't always been so, right? There was sometimes a little bit of convincing, right, for why you should hire someone abroad. But I feel like now people kind of get it. The next set of questions that they ask is, how can I do so compliantly, right? Like, how do I give them benefits? And so when you start to ask those questions, quite honestly, as a Series A seed stage startup, you don't have the time to figure out those nitty-gritty details. You actually just want someone to come in, wave a magic wand, and all those things are done. That is the advantage, right, that companies like Cardano bring, right, to these founders, is we can help you just, you know, you find the talent and the rest of the operational hurdles you don't have to go through. And so now you can just focus on onboarding them, giving them a task, helping them add value to your organization instead of worrying about what the currency rates are or how you're going to get money to someone somewhere around the world. That is the advantage we bring. And to just talk about how we are unique in that process, we make it very simple and transparent, right? A lot of what is, you know, interesting about the industry is just like things like pricing, you know, the contracts, what are the terms, who has the liabilities. So that extra transparency is really a difference maker, right, for the people that are buying the platform.
Yeah. And I guess one more differentiator is that you have a specific focus, right? So I know that you have this product that is called Instant Pay, right? And as far as I understood, like the main idea of that product is just to change the ways like people get paid in Africa specifically. So can you break down how this Instant Pay works and how it is like changing the game for workers, financial freedom in Africa?
100%. You know, when I hear people talk about global work or remote work, I hear a lot of what I've already said, right? Opportunities, they're brilliant people. I think what people intuitively may not understand is that it affects the financial lives of these people, right? There are people that are literally their financial lives change. So one big mission for us is it's not just about pushing the money to the person. How can we make them do more with their money? In fact, how can we make them save in USD? How can we give them a virtual card so that they can pay for their Netflix? We're doing more by offering direct financial services, right, to the payee. One of such services is what you mentioned, which is this Instant Pay service. And all that it does is just, hey, if you are on some kind of paid schedule, like a monthly schedule or, I don't know, biweekly schedule, we kind of know who you're working for. We know how much you've worked in totality. We can give you a part of your earnings early, right? Instead of you waiting until the end of the month. That is a game changer, right? You think about like someone in Kenya, like that money, the time value of the money is so important. It's not just the magnitude. I can give you $2,000 now, but giving you $2,000 10 days into the month is a huge game changer, right? Because now if there's a sudden health issue in your family or there's school fees you need to pay for your kid, you don't really have to wait till the end of the month. So that's just an example of how we're going further in sort of the helping the financial lives, right?
And that's very interesting. And I'm just would like to go a bit deeper if you don't mind. So to provide this service to your users, you should have like those companies that pay those users. Basically, you should have them as a client as clients as well. That's how it works, right? Or those users can provide some information about like their income and just give me some details because that's very interesting.
Yeah. So today we kind of do a B2B2C kind of model where we want to have a relationship with the customer, right? The business customer first, because, you know, that allows us to underwrite the risk a little bit differently. But look, in the future, we're thinking about, I think the ability to have your earnings whenever you work for them should just be a given, right? Like we shouldn't have to, if you've worked 5 days of the month, you should get paid for that 5 days. So we're thinking about models where we can offer this directly to the consumer. But for now, we kind of need the relationship with the business first, right, to do it.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Okay, so, you know, I work with many employee of record companies, like each focusing on specific, like a client or talent region, you know. For example, like companies in Germany and they're hiring talent in Latin America, for example. So with Cadena's focus in terms of client and hiring region, I know you're focusing on Africa specifically, right? But can you give us some more details in terms of this combination? So, for example, the majority of your clients are based in the US and they're hiring in Africa, or you don't have such a combination?
Yeah. So, you know, the interesting thing is we're known for Africa because, you know, that's sort of where we started and that's where, but, you know, last year we made payments into about 32 countries around the world. And so we do make payments today to Latin America, to Southeast Asia, and so forth. That said, our customers are, you know, typically US entities, right? So US based companies or platforms that are trying to pay people around the world, right? So predominantly, I think 90-something percent of our customers are in the US. We have a few customers in the UK, for example. And then we're paying people, like I said, in 32 countries, with Africa being one of the major destinations, right, today.
Got it. But still, I mean, you're probably the very first person that has such a focus on Africa. So if you don't mind, I would like to go deeper there because it's a very interesting market in terms of business, talent. So with that, what initially motivates your clients to hire in Africa? Is it for business expansion when, for example, some company is trying to expand to the local market and from the business perspective, right? So, and for that, they're hiring like a sales, marketing, growth roles there. Or usually it's more about cost reduction when like they just outsource some part of their work to Africa or can you give us some insight on that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what we see generally is that there is a focus on I'm going to get the best people from wherever they are. And we see a lot of this with early on with the startups, but even large enterprises are understanding, right, that that could be a way to save money, to be more productive. And so the driver is really just usually, hey, I have a software engineer base, right, in Nigeria, or I hired one person. Usually that's how it goes. I found a way to hire this person from Nairobi. They were so good. I needed another engineer. They said, you can hire my friend, right? And then they start exploring. So it's really not because they're expanding to like that geography. It's really because they want to find the best people to come work for them. That's the use case that we see, right, usually. One of the things that we also specialize in, we actually partner with talent marketplaces, right? So these are the kinds of businesses that literally their entire business is to match entities in the US with talent around the world. And so when we go to these talent marketplaces, we're able to give them our software and they can basically operate efficiently. A lot of those talent marketplaces already have pre-vetted software engineers, designers, product marketers. They are literally in the business of doing that. So they find these good talents, they train them, and they basically pair them up, right, with people, Fortune 500 companies. So the combination of that is sort of how businesses discover the talent in Africa.
Awesome. But still, like from my experience, and we source for talent in 22 countries across like Latin America, Canada, Central Eastern Europe, and from my experience, each country, each region has its own like specifics, right, and its own challenges, its own opportunities, right. So, from your perspective, Africa as a region, what opportunities, what challenges you can tell us about?
Well, I have to get you to Africa at some point, but if you ever do, let me know. I think what you're going to notice a few things. You're going to notice how young the population is, right? Africa is increasingly the youngest region in the world. In fact, the next 10, 20 years is going to basically be majority of the global workforce. So we have this situation where you have a lot of young people generally. And then another thing is a lot of them are English speaking, right? You know, because of the history of the continent, you either have people that are speaking English or French. So there's not a big language barrier, right? I'm from Ghana. I grew up speaking English. The schools taught in English. So you kind of have that language component working pretty well in terms of just integrating, you know, those folks into Western companies. And then I feel like the other things are kind of like qualitative, right? Where the ambition, the sheer ambition, I don't know if you've met like an African person or you've worked with one, but I bet you they're just working very hard, right? Like they'll go overtime. You can message them at any point in time. They would answer. I feel like that combination of those things is just a no-brainer, right? So you have those things working specifically. For Europe, it's very convenient, right? Because of the time zone, the GMT time zone, GMT plus one, all the way to plus three. So it kind of works. For the US, especially if you're like on the East Coast, you can still interface with a lot of Africa pretty well. So I just think that all around, you know, all of those factors come together beautifully, right, to make it a very interesting place to do business.
And to the business, and most in most cases, we're talking about tech talent, right?
Yes. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about software engineers, you know, designers, product managers, stuff like that. And a little bit of marketing sometimes.
A little bit of what? Marketing?
Marketing, just like you know, social media marketing, like that.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Got it. Okay. Awesome. And what about AI? I know that you have your own like AI project, right? And from what I understood, it kind of offers insights into payroll data, right? And like some specific benefits and so on. Just can we talk more about this part? Because AI is like in this huge trend nowadays. So we should talk about AI in every single podcast.
I feel like it has to come up, right? But look, when you think about our industry, it's actually pretty ripe for AI. I know everybody says that and everybody's industry is going to be changing. But when you think about global payroll, there's all of these countries. Each of them have different tax laws and regulations. If you are operating in the industry, I'm sure all the people you've spoken to, it's so hard. What happens when a tax code changes in Philippines? How are pensions done in Brazil? All of this data is sitting with humans today, with experts in all of those locations. And so our kind of ambition is to get to a place where we can streamline all of those data. Imagine you call an API and it can tell you what the local labor law of Kenya is. You call another API and you can submit taxes in Greece. Now, when you have that data, you have APIs, which is ways for companies to interact with that data. One thing you can do is you can just put a language learning model on top of it. So now you can actually have a co-pilot for the HR admin or anybody that is interested in just asking questions. So that is the ambition, right, for us with the Kadana AI. Today, it's able to tell you what is a software engineer in Nigeria cost. And then it can tell you that. I want to pay for pensions. What are the required pensions in Nairobi? That is sort of the power of AI, right, with cross-border payroll.
Awesome. I guess before we conclude, Albert, given your extensive experience, what maybe single piece of advice would you offer to entrepreneurs and maybe tech leaders aiming to expand globally?
Yeah, I think that, it can seem very scary at first. I would say firsthand, I'm a startup and I've worked with startups before. We have been able to save a lot of money. And I know it's a bit of a touchy subject, but just from a pure cost basis, it's worth exploring, right? A lot of the time you can find really good people, you can save a little bit of money. But you have to really be careful about who you partner with. They have to be experts. Remember, you are in UK, you're in the US. The last thing you want when you're about to terminate someone is to all of a sudden find there was a clause you didn't think about, or there's some law they didn't tell you about. And then they tell you, look, this invoice was this amount, but next month the currency has dropped, so it's this amount. There's so many different things that, people don't show you. So read behind the fine prints, ask them, what does it mean for currencies to change or devalue? Ask them, what does it mean for me to terminate someone, right? Ask them, like, are these benefits standardized across all these countries, or are these countries different? Those are really, really important questions. And then you look, it sounds cliche, but just do a reference check, right? Just ask them, can I speak to someone that has done any of these things with you? And it's a very quick and easy way to really figure out who is real and who is not, because there's so many different players in that space. But that's what I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I still have two questions. we missed this. Do you provide I'll rephrase my question. So the majority of those guys that your clients are hiring from Africa, they hire them as contractors or as full-time employees?
Yeah, it's majority contractor, right? But what happens naturally is you find a really, really good person. You want to integrate them with your team deeply. Eventually, they come to us and say, what would it take for us to convert them to an employee use case? So we have a majority contractor use case, and we have the employer of record model for the employment. We also have something called agent of record, which is a little bit new, and it gives you some privileges and protections to even hire contractor. And then we have just the usual independent contractor model. So there's so many different ways that we can serve our clients today.
That's awesome. And for talent, we forgot about talent, right? So, what advice would you give to them? I mean, those guys that really want to become a part of some cool Silicon Valley startup, you know, and they're based in Africa, or they're based in Eastern Europe, or in Brazil, or in South America, for example. So what advice would you give to them?
I kid you not, I've hired probably like 10 people where this literally happened. They reached out to me on LinkedIn. They had done a lot of research on my business. A few of them went ahead to like even show me a GitHub code. Says like, I've thought about your business. You need some payments. Here's a payments module that I've created. And I was like, that's interesting. Like, you know, you know about my business. You showed me like some source code. I got to look at it. So I feel like the advice is don't underestimate the power of literally just reaching out to these people. Especially sometimes you see someone's LinkedIn as co-founder, CEO. It sounds very scary. Literally just reach out to them, right? And then when you do, you kind of want to show proof of your value. Hey, I've done XYZ things. Here is a link. You can see my designs for yourself. And even the icing on the cake is if you can do a new project based off of their company and you show it to them, man, that's already a lot of value demonstrated, right, from just that intro message. So that's the trick that I'll say that I just encourage people to look into. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good one. I really recommend to do just exactly what you said. Okay, awesome. I mean, I guess it was a really great talk. I mean, thanks a lot, Albert, for this deep dive into hiring trends across Africa, this changing the game with your instant pay solution, and just generally speaking, the future of global hiring. So, yeah, thanks a lot, and you know, keep up this great work and take care.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Brett.